or when their bows are broken and they have thus lost the ability to fight, your majesty does not kill them. For there are principles that govern even fighting. If an enemy has no chariot, is unmindful of the fighting art because of fear, or is unwilling to fight, he is not to be killed. Kamsa's ministers remind Kamsa that, despite his power, he was cognizant of the principles. Excuse the demigods because of their incapability. At the present emergency, the minister said, I advise Kamsa to give up the traditional etiquette in fighting and chastise the enemy at any cost. We don't find in the Srimad Bhagavatam any record of Kamsa fighting with the demigods. There's record of Kalanemi, who was the previous incarnation of Kamsa, fighting with the demigods and being killed by Vishnu, which is how this whole story comes about, that Kamsa wants to kill the child who had killed him in his previous life when he was Kalanemi. It may be that the story is given in other Puranas, because in other Puranas you'll find that Jai. Often the stories are told in more detail, or they may be told even somewhat differently altogether. Sometimes you'll find Hiranyakashipu doesn't get killed by Nrisimha Devi, becomes a good guy. Apparently, some of the Puranas. So that may, the difference may be there, that's Kalpa Bhed. It may be that in different Kalpas, it's the history is, it acts out differently, just like this idea is there in quantum mechanics, that from any situation there can be, it's just ordinary philosophy also, but it's been scientificized. From any situation, so many different situations can evolve. They have the idea of simultaneously. It's apparently possible, according to quantum physics, that there are all kinds of simultaneous universes evolving at every moment. Although it doesn't seem very reasonable if we're going to go back to what scientists used to rely on, which is pratyaksha, which is what we observe. It doesn't seem to be a very reasonable proposition. Anyway, it's possible that there may be the different leelas of the Lord are enacted a little differently every time he appears. Anyway, we don't have any information of Kamsa fighting with the demigods. It's quite possible, because up to that time, the demigods used to frequently come and go on this planet, and there were very powerful persons like Kamsa who could also go from this planet to other planets. Right up till the end of Dwarka Yuga, there were people with such powers. Even now, there are people with the mystic powers of traveling to other planets, but they're not so prominent and despicable as Kamsa. So anyway, it's being stated here by the different demons. They're praising Kamsa, that you're such a great fighter. Even the demigods are afraid of you. In the battle, they all run away. They surrender to you in fear. So they are reminding him that even as a great demon, he used to follow the rules. One rule is, it's mentioned here, is that if someone's very afraid in the fight, they shouldn't be killed. Because, actually, that's worse than death for them already. If a Kshatriya comes home without any wound on his body, he's considered, what were you doing? What were you doing? You were in the medical corps or what? You're supposed to be fighting. Even now, there are families in India, you see the Kshatriya families. They send their sons to the battle, and they're very pleased if their son comes home in a coffin. They say, yes, he has upheld our family honor. They like that. They consider it honorable to die on the battlefield. But for one to, either they should kill or be killed. That is the Kshatriya law. There are so many stories from Rajasthan, especially the Rajputs. Their Kshatriya nature, very strong. Even now, even today, the Gurkhas in Nepal, they still have the, that Pumna Prabhu was telling us that the only time there was any insurgency among the Gurkhas and the British, they've been fighting for the British for like almost 300 years. So the only time that they had any uprising or protest was when they were brought to the Falkland Islands and they were refused to fight. You just stay in the barracks. No, we want to go and fight. Well, we can't go, we can't come all the way to the battle's going on just next door, and we're just the reserve forces. We have to go up front. Another story I heard, I think I just told it the other day, that the British Army commander in the Falklands asked the Gurkha troops that it's a very dangerous mission, we want to drop you from the airplanes right in the middle of the enemy forces. Who volunteers? And only 50% volunteered. He said, well, I'm very surprised, I never saw such a thing. I expected you all to volunteer. Why didn't you all volunteer? He said, well, if you drop us from the airplanes, we're going to die. Oh, we'll give you parachutes. Then they all volunteered. They were prepared, 50% were ready to drop without parachutes. That's the story. I don't know. There's so many stories. So that spirit was there. So if in the middle of the battle, someone couldn't fight, he was so afraid that he just couldn't fight, then he would be spared. It's because already he's considered killed. Worse than death. If a Kshatriya is either he's defeated and he comes home, or if he surrenders, both things are worse than death. That's why we see that Rukmi, he was defeated by Krishna. He was posting that Krishna ran away with my sister. Rukmi's sister's name was, hope you all know, Rukmini. 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 He's been in the Gurukul. He learned the American pronunciation. Rukmini. Rukmini. Actually. What's Krishna's original mother's name? Beginning with Deva. Devaki. Okay, not Devaki. As we often hear in America. Devaki. And there. Narada Muni, etc. So, the Rukmi, he was boasting, I'm going to go and chastise Krishna, we'll bring his head home, and so many different things. Well, what happened? Krishna was going to kill Rukmi, but then he just, on Balaram's advice, you know, you shouldn't be so cruel. After all, he is your wife's brother. So Krishna just tied him up and did a little shaving job with his sword. Left some patches of mustache. You see, even now in India, people think you have to have a mustache. It's very manly. It shows your manly nature. So Krishna cut a little bit here, a little bit there, cut some of his hair. So he was absolutely, he was defeated and humiliated, and he thought, I can't go back. How can I go back like this? Humiliated. Jarasandha also was defeated and went back. And he thought, well, now I'll just become a yogi. But then his friend said, don't worry, it was just bad luck and this and that. And shamelessly, he came back again and again. Actually, he was shameless. Because for a Kshatriya, he should have died of shame rather than come back defeated. What to speak of being defeated 18 times, 17 times. So the Kshatriya rule was there. They had such pride. They were defeated that they couldn't come home. They would either die in the battle or be victorious. There's no question of coming home for one who was an actual Kshatriya. It was considered so shameful. So here we see that Kamsa, he was being praised by his ministers, that you're such a great fighter, you observe all the rules of fighting, if someone is afraid, you don't kill them. Quite opposite to modern warfare. Which in modern warfare, the father of modern warfare, we can say, is Ashvatthama, who, when the battle was over, battle of Kurukshetra was over, he came back into the enemy camp. To him, the enemy camp was the Pandava camp. And he went around at night when they were all sleeping and killed so many people, beginning with the five sons of Draupadi. So this is the beginning of modern genocidal warfare. They're killed by any means. But here we see that even if the enemy was afraid or dispositioned, his chariot was broken, they wouldn't. They could kill, but they wouldn't. They didn't take the. They wouldn't do such a thing. That was military etiquette. So, Kamsa is being praised by his ministers like that, but they're saying, "Yes, you're famous like that, but this is an emergency because the child who's to kill you has already taken birth somewhere else." Now we see that when Kamsa was taking his sister Devaki, he was driving her on the chariot from her wedding parade, there was an oracle which said that the eighth child of your sister will kill you. So he believed that. But then later on, when he heard that after 7 children had been born from David King, he heard that another child had been born, he went there to kill that child, who picked up the child by the leg to smash his head on the stone. But actually it was a girl. And she slipped out from his hands and went up into the sky and said that actually the child who is to kill you has already been born elsewhere. Now comes thought, he didn't realize that both the oracle and the speech of Durga, who was actually the child, were true. Apparently, what Durga said had cancelled out what he had heard previously from the oracle, the voice from the sky, disembodied voice from the sky. It appeared to contradict them, although actually it didn't, because he didn't know the mystery of Krishna's birth. So then he was very nice to Devaki and Vasudeva. He said, look, I'm sorry, never mind, what to do, it's already done. But it's interesting that even though he thought, he said that, well, you know, even the voices of the gods, they may be false. What can you do? Kali Yuga is just around the corner, you see. Even the voice from the sky, Devabani, even that is not trustworthy. But still, he trusted what Durga said. He could have just as well said, hey, look, I already got told one child was going to kill me, and that was wrong. How do I know you're right? He had faith in Durga, what she said. So on the basis of that, he came to see his ministers, and he was in a, what's that word, recalcitrant mood, a mood of conciliation, that, you know, I killed all the children of my sister, and now I find out that, anyway, it's not one of my sister's children who's going to kill me. I did very bad. Even from the point of reputation, even from the point of view of reputation, for a Kshatriya or anyone to kill the children, especially the children of their sister, what kind of behavior is that? Little baby children. Because nowadays, killing children is a big business. It goes on everywhere, you see. Everywhere in Gujarat, you can't go more than half a kilometer in Gujarat, this higher state of Gujarat, without seeing a sign, Garbhapat, there so rupee. And I heard that in the villages it's cheaper. It's fantastic rupees, only 85 rupees. People have less money in the villages. So only 85 rupees you can have an abortion. And it's going on. It must be a big business, otherwise why are there so many advertisements for it everywhere? It's going on, there's no doubt about it, for all the piety, so-called. Abortion means they forget to use the contraceptives. So it's become a big business nowadays. In those days, it was, even among the demons, it was considered something not to be done. But anyway, Kamsa was doing it because he thought that the first rule is survival. Actually, for a real Kshatriya, the first rule is not survival. The first rule is honor. Honor above, dignity above life. That was their motto. And in what is called real politics or actual politics, the survival is the on by any means. You see that even they have these nuclear bombs, they have the idea we can bomb and kill hundreds and thousands of people just to for the sake of my own survival, for the sake of our nation. No one even questions. They say, for peace we are bombing. Just in Serbia now, they destroyed the country in the name of peace. In Japan, they bombed 2 big cities in the name of peace, blew them completely. Even that bombing of Dresden in Germany was even just as destructive as everything was flattened, just as destructive as just one by one, one bomb at a time. They flattened the city. And this is modern warfare, that you attack civilian targets. But in Kshatriya law, there is no such question. They would fight Kshatriya to Kshatriya. And whoever won, they'd become the king. As far as the citizens were concerned, it didn't make any difference to them. They were simply sitting at home, and if a new king came in, they'd give the taxes to him instead of the other king, that's all. And there were Kshatriyas who They were looking after their land, overseeing their land, and when there was time of fighting, they'd be caught. Otherwise, most people, they were simply going on with their life, that's all. So there were Kshatriya codes, and the ministers of Kamsa, they're saying that you are a staunch follower of such codes, overlooking the fact that he had killed the children of David, for which he was now repentant. But they didn't want him to be repentant. They saw Kamsa coming in a chastened mood. What is this? How can you be a demoniac king without acting in a demoniac way? And now you've heard that the child who used to kill you is born somewhere else. So they said, this is the time for action. No more of this niceness. Now they advise you give up this nice mood that is not characteristic of you. Remember your real self. We should dispatch demons to the different villages to kill all the children who have been born recently. And specifically, Narad Muni was to come a little later at the end of this chapter. Is it not? No? When does he come? Narad Muni will come and specifically tell Kamsa that, hey, you know, your enemies are the demigods, right? Well, just for your information, they've all been born in the Yadu dynasty. How about that? So, the Yadu and the different dynasties, Rishi. So they're inciting Kamsa to act in a demoniac way. They said that so far you've been following the rules of honor. Of course, again, they didn't mention that he'd broken the rules of honor by killing the children of his sister. So far you followed the rules of honor, but now this is an emergency. The child who is to kill you has been born elsewhere, therefore you should kill all children. This is demoniac. To kill children is demoniac. There's no injunction for doing such a thing. But even the demigods, you see, they were also ready at one point in time to do this. Which point in time? Who can remember? In the Bhagavata, it's mentioned. There was a great demon, so they thought, in the womb of Kayadhu, who was the wife of Hiranyakashipu. So they were waiting for that child to be born. They didn't want to perform an abortion. They didn't want to kill the child in the womb. But they thought, let the child be born, then we'll kill. But then Narad Muni came and said, no, don't do that. Actually, he's a great devotee. So they accepted Narad Muni's words and not only didn't kill the child in the womb, but they circumambulated the others, thinking that this is a great devotee. Mahan Bhagavatam, Maha Bhagavatam Mahan. That is the description Narad gave. That he is a great devotee, even among great devotees. Indra himself, though, on another occasion, he entered the womb of Diti to kill the child therein, because Diti was performing a vow for the sake of getting a child who would be inimical to the demigods and specifically towards Indra. So Indra served Diti very nicely. Hidan, Diti is Hidan. Diti and Diti are sisters. Aunt come stepma, what would you call, half? How would you say that? It's like a kind of a co-mother, yeah. Because Diti and Diti are sisters, but at the same time, they're both wives of Kashyap. So, he was just waiting. He was serving her very nicely. In the beginning, she was suspicious. Then towards the end of her life, he found that she lay down in an unclean state. In this way, the power of following the vow was broken. Indra took advantage of that, entered her womb, and cut the womb into 7 pieces. And then they started crying. So he cut again. Didn't quite kill them. So he cut all the 7 into another 7. It became 49. And he said, don't cry. Marut, 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 Marut. Don't cry. And they became known as the Marut. And actually they became demigods and they became favorable to Indra. But we see that Indra also was prepared to kill the child in the womb. So even the demigods sometimes, they act in a way which is not proper. When the thought of survival is there, then survival comes above everything. Even among the demigods, Indra is supposed to be Kshatriya. And you see here, even the demigods, they're Kshatriyas, they're described as being afraid in the fight. So the rules are there, that the Kshatriya should act like this. And one who is fixed in his rules, is fixed in his honor, he will follow that. One who is shameless, even he may be a demigod, he will flout even to the level of abortion, go down to the lowest level for the sake of his own personal interest. So this is the difference actually between a real devotee and a demon, or even Indra is not a demon, but he's Sakambhati, more interested in his material self-interest than in worshipping Krishna, it appears from his behavior in many instances. That is the difference. That is the difference between a very neophyte devotee and an advanced devotee. That what is the difference? That he has his own personal self-interest in mind more, or in service to Krishna? What is more interested in? Is he more interested in serving Krishna? He's more interested in fulfilling his own self-interest, or he's more interested in sacrificing everything for serving Krishna? This is the test. Krishna gives tests. We all have to face tests. That how much we are concerned to serve Krishna, or whether we are performing devotional service for personal amelioration of personal desires. So that test will be there. Kamsa was supposed to be very honorable, but when the test came, your own self-interest is threatened, therefore kill all the children, he agreed. So that test we may have in our devotional life also. That Satru Maharaj wrote a book, I think. Am I a devotee or a demon? And that test we'll have to see. If we're really a devotee, then we're prepared to sacrifice. That is the symptom of the topmost devotee. Why are the gopis considered the topmost devotees? Because they sacrifice to the greatest degree for Krishna. They never wanted anything from Krishna. They were prepared to sacrifice everything for Krishna. This is the test. Hare Krishna. Any question or comment? Please.
Not only were they ready to sacrifice everything, because I think there are a lot of devotees who sacrifice everything, Bali Maharaj. But their thoughts were also constantly, they were being so absorbed in Krishna that there was nothing else. Whereas the other Bali Maharaj had other activities, so he was ready to sacrifice.
Yeah.
So it was this all absorption, total absorption.
Yeah.
Which is very tough, very difficult, because the mind. I don't know.
Yeah, there are different ways to see what pure devotion is. But the gopis, because they sacrifice their honor, to the degree of the honor of a woman to sacrifice her social honor, that's considered a. Of course, Bali Maharaj also sacrificed. They did so also, yeah, but not. They weren't given the opportunity to the extent that the gopis were though.
Maybe they weren't thinking of Krishna.
No, they weren't, certainly. But they weren't given the same opportunity as the gopis to. Although Krishna said that it's just to think of me as just the same, but he didn't give the opportunity to engage in various pastimes with them as he did the gopis. Well, there are different levels of devotees. And Krishna accepts. And there are some people who say, well, Manjari Bhav is the highest, everyone should get into that, but you know, if everyone becomes a Manjari, then who's going to be his cow? Krishna also likes to be with his cows. And if all the cows suddenly decide you want to be gopi, then how's Krishna going to hurt the cows? Someone has to be a cow. And someone.
There are.
There are. What are you asking? He gives him a lot of service. Indra is given a lot of service, but it's not internal service. It's service is dovetailing. Indra's service is dovetailing his desire to lord it over. Actually, and Krishna ends up most of the time helping Indra out. He's always making mistakes and getting in trouble and so on. Same time, we shouldn't criticize Indra because he's a great personality. So, that was a chance to dovetail his material desire to lord it over. But Prabhupada's desire to preach Krishna consciousness all over the world is not a material desire. Yes. The demigods are called Sakam Bhaktas. There are Nishkam Bhaktas who have no material desires, and there are the demigods are known as Sakam Bhaktas. They have material desires to fulfill. So they're allowed to fulfill those material desires and at the same time worship Krishna. It's very clear from studying Prabhupada's books. The demigods are called Sakam Bhaktas. Generally. It may be. There are levels of pure devotion also. He gets into this pure devotional mood from time to time. When he came to pray to Krishna, then he realized that in that time he realized I'm supposed to be a pure devotee, but his manifestation of the pure devotional mood is that's called there's one word given in the Bhagavatam purport. I just can't remember it now. It means that one may be a pure devotee, but his mood changes. Sometimes he remembers that he's supposed to be a pure devotee, and other times he doesn't. I can't remember the term. It's like flickering pure devotion. But yes, now I want to be a pure devotee, and then sometimes he forgets, and he's kind of mixed devotion. Then he gets smashed by Maya and thinks, well, actually, I should be a pure devotee.
About
what? Yeah, that according to some theories, every situation that you're in, it could be followed in an innumerable number of ways. Just like I'm sitting here now, I could remain like this, I could go like this, or I could go like this. I could go like this. So many different things you could do. So according to some theories, all these different possibilities are being played out. And then each possibility leads to another possibility. So just in 1 second you can get infinite possibilities. It's a theory. According to quantum mechanics, the mathematics of it allows for them. Although it doesn't conform either with Pratyaksha or Anuman. It sounds rather nonsensical. Well, I was giving that example in relation to the pastimes of the Lord. That they, from a similar situation, it developed somewhat differently. Never exactly the same. How to understand? I mean, what do you mean, how to understand? No, that which is spiritual doesn't become stale. That which is spiritual doesn't become stale or worn out. Just like we're chanting Hare Krishna again and again and again, it doesn't become boring. The debilitating influence of time is not there. It's always fresh. The nature of Krishna is always fresh. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jaya.